Hi, I'm Dan Krynas from the Leader of Learning podcast, a proud member of the Education Podcast Network, just like the show you're listening to right now. The opinions expressed are those of the individual hosts. Make sure to check out all the other great podcasts at edupodcastnetwork.com. And get ready, because the learning begins in 3, 2, 1.
Hey, today I'm talking with Sarji Latucci, who you may remember from way back at episode 164, where we talked about his book, The Visual Edge, Graphic Organizers for Standards-Based Learning. Now, we talk a little bit about the book today, but our main focus is on his recent article, Voice and Choice is Important, but Sometimes It's Not Enough. Good stuff today. Thanks for listening. Enjoy.
You are listening to Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12, a podcast for educators, helping you help kids achieve their dreams. And now here's Steve with this week's show.
Today, I welcome back to Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12, Mr. Sarji Latucci. You may remember him from episode 164, which, wow, is just about a year ago, which I can't believe. I kept thinking when I was getting ready to, I reached out to Sarji to interview him about this article that we're going to talk about in just a second, his article called Voice and Choice is Important, but Sometimes It's Not Enough. It was published in June of this year in EdSurge. And when I reached out to him to talk to him, I thought, yeah, it was just a couple months ago. I think it was, you know, back in January or something. I'm like, oh my gosh, no, it was back in August, literally almost a year ago. So, wow, time flies, you know. So he has this article out titled Voice and Choice is Important, but Sometimes It's Not Enough, published in June of this year in EdSurge. And this is going to be a major part of our talk today. He also is the author, if you remember, The Visual Edge, Graphic Organizers for Standards-Based Learning. Additionally, Sarji has taught ESL and social science throughout his teaching career in suburban Chicago. He earned his bachelor's degree in education from Eastern Illinois University, a master's in educational leadership from Midwestern State University, and a master's in curriculum instruction from National Lewis University. Say hi to everyone, Sarji.
Hello, Steve. Thanks for having me back. And it's nice to be back.
Great to have you here. And, you know, so, and as we get started here, last time we talked, it was funny. I was looking over what I asked you about, and I asked you if you were a Cubs or a White Sox fan. Well, this time I'm going to try a different sport. Did you watch the World Cup? And if so, any thoughts about the outcome?
Yeah, I definitely watched it. It was a really great tournament. And, you know, as I watched it, my takeaway is just a bunch of unexpected things happened, which should happen in a tournament situation. But it was really interesting to see the three teams that I thought were above the rest were Brazil, Germany, and Spain. And in the final day, they were nowhere to be seen. And so that was unexpected. And it was unexpected to also see Croatia, who I didn't think was in that top group, to actually make it that far. And my other takeaway on the player level is, did you watch France play throughout the tournament?
Not throughout the tournament. I only really started paying attention to him towards the end.
Well, this player they have, number 10, Mbappe, he didn't stand out in the final as much, but the games prior to that, he really looks like he could be the next really great explosive player, like a Ronaldo type. He's 19 years old. So that was really interesting to see a player emerge.
That's pretty awesome, because I know, like you, I was paying attention to some other teams. And even though I knew how strong France was, I was really paying attention to other teams, and none of which ended up anywhere near the end. Or a couple of them.
That's the beauty of a tournament is anything can happen. And, you know, it's just a one game situation. And so, you know, when you have that much talent on the field, it's just about every game I thought was 50-50.
Yeah, that's what was awesome. Then, you know, several of those games as we got into the end, going into extra time and having PKs, which I really hate ending a game on PKs. But I feel for the goalies. That's
they definitely have it tough in the PKs for sure.
Very much. You find out whether they what they're made of. That's for sure. Right? Something else.
So, definitely.
So anyway, thanks for listening. Yeah, it was an exciting tournament. It was cool stuff, and wasn't wasn't quite expecting. There were a couple other teams I was expecting in there, and but it was exciting. I think they gave it a great run. It was a good one. So let's shift on into what you do. You're a bilingual ESL teacher, right?
Yes.
And that's what I thought. So what are some of the challenges you face with helping the kids get to a strong level of understanding content?
Well, as a teacher of immigrant kids in the ESL bilingual program, first of all, there's a cultural challenge in terms of an experience gap. And, I teach social science as well as English. And so, like, take social science, the kids that are immigrants, they might have had social science in their home country, but, world history and government and their country's history, they might have had that and they might be strong with that vocabulary and that content. But in America, all of those classes are very much different. And so being aware of that experience gap and trying to fill that and really being aware of what they don't know and kind of getting them caught up, I believe is important. And that's what I try to do. You take a kid from, for example, Nigeria, he might have had world history, but that world history in Nigeria is different than the way that we teach it and what we teach here. And also government, obviously. So just being aware of that and kind of respecting students' literacy, but then kind of filling the vocabulary gap just because of their experience is one challenge that I believe that we need to fill, that I try to fill. And the second challenge is just having a literacy balance with the vocabulary. And so balancing vocabulary and concept instruction for the social science at the same time having in each unit some literacy is I believe important. And so important. And so, for example, if the unit centers around the Constitution, it's important to teach those concepts and what the Constitution what it says, and getting students familiar with that, but then actually having them read it and do a little bit of literacy, a little bit of main idea detail, determining some inferences and doing some claims and evidence and doing some of the literacy and a little bit of the analysis with it, kind of keeping a balance of that in each unit are two of the challenges that I kind of look at and try to be aware of and try to fill those gaps for the students, the cultural and the literacy with the vocabulary.
Well, that's excellent. So, when you're talking about the vocabulary, I can imagine they have a wide range of probably more lends itself a little more to conversational than it does to the academic.
Students come in and they're at different levels of literacy, but generally speaking, they've had, they've gone to school, they've had social science. And the speaking kind of goes along with the reading and the writing, but kind of looking at that holistically and kind of filling the gaps as they come by, I think is important.
No, most definitely. So thank you. So and before we go any further, one of the things I want to do is make sure that we give a recap of your book, The Visual Edge: Graphic Organizers for Standards-Based Learning. Can you just give the listeners a brief overview of your book and why you think teachers would want to use it?
Definitely. So I think sometimes standards in our classrooms, it sometimes takes on the character of teachers making tasks, questions, and providing students rubrics with blank spaces to write answers with per the standard. Or it takes on the character of multiple choice questions per the standards with A, B, C, D answers for students to figure out the answer. And what I believe is that's not enough, instructionally speaking, to get kids to mastery. And so what I've created with the Visual Edge is one graphic organizer for each Common Core standard, grade 6 through 12. What you get is a tool to teach each of those standards, middle and high school, English, history, and science, that you can kind of fill that blank with. When you're giving the task question a rubric, you're giving kids something to fill that blank space with that they can work with and work through the answer with before they go ahead and possibly write a correct answer. And so each page has three sections. You get the standard at the top. You get an explanation section that I provide. And then the majority of the page is the carefully crafted graphic organizer that I've made for that standard at the top. And so teachers can make copies, distribute to students, shoot the graphic organizer up on a smart board, kind of model and kind of work through some things and show students. And so as far as why would teachers want to use it, it really makes the standards-based instruction more clear. And it really keeps a graphic organizer, or what I call a standards-based instructional, it really keeps instruction more clear. It makes it puts teachers and students on the same page. There's some of the upper level thinking with the standards is, you know, it's hard to really kind of connect the dots on the upper level thinking, and these graphic organizers really provide clarity. Secondly, there's flexibility in how a teacher and the student might use it, and so a student can choose a text or topic that's personal to them and use the graphic organizer to kind of communicate and work through the standard and come with a correct answer. And teachers can use it in any part of a lesson to be used for modeling, cooperative learning, for individual assignments, even assessments. And then finally, why teachers would want to use it is there's an efficiency that's gained there. And so when you're using these graphic organizers for the few lessons that you might have per each standard, I think you get to mastery with those three lessons a little bit quicker and more efficiently. And then finally, with the efficiency, it saves time grading, which I think is a great thing for teachers, because when you have 100 students to read through 100 paragraphs is something that's really difficult and time consuming. And so when you're getting those answers with a graphic organizer, you just put your eyes on it for 10, 15 seconds, see if the student made sense in terms of their answer from the text or their brainstorm for the writing, and then move on instead of reading a paragraph. And then your feedback is a lot more efficient as well and more pointed. And so I urge teachers and administrators, take a look. I mean, it's, you know, for any philosophy, any style that a school or a classroom teacher might have, I think it really fits. And if literacy is important to us, and you know, that middle and high school literacy piece kind of leads to doing well on college and career readiness tests like ACT, I think the visual edge can really be a really good asset to our classrooms. So again, teachers, administrators, take a look, see if you like it.
That's excellent. And you know, one of the things I like about your book, Sarji, is that it's easy to understand your point. It's easy to, you read it, you understand the concepts behind it. And so it's a tool that you can put to, you know, you read tonight, you can put it into your plans tonight, and you can be using it in the classroom tomorrow is my point. And I think that's pretty cool.
Well, I tried to make it as easy to use as possible. And again, I'm a classroom teacher, so I get that resources need to be easy to use and easy to kind of process for both students and teachers. So I made these graphic organizers with that thought in mind for sure.
And it comes through loud and clear, which is really cool. So what, you know, one of the things that I'd like to do right now is, because this is getting us towards your recent article, I'd like you to talk a little bit about scaffolding and what that is and what it means to a teacher.
Sure. So I kind of think of scaffolding as, you know, when a painter paints a building, they're standing on scaffolding for the second floor and above.
Yeah.
Or like a window washer, you know, he might be washing on the 80th floor, a window on the 80th floor, which is really scary.
Yes.
When I see that. But they have scaffolding to, you know, to sit on, to stand on, and you know, to do their job and to help them do their job. And so I kind of think of scaffolding kind of like that. And it's what we're doing to help students to learn the content and to learn the literacy of our instruction. And so what it means for me as a teacher, it means a few different things. And first of all, the relationship that we're building with our students individually and with a class, I think scaffolding kind of starts there. And so helping students learn starts with building a good, solid, trustful, respectful relationship with them, both on an academic level and on a social level, especially at the beginning of the year, and kind of maintaining that. That really helps to scaffold instruction. But then when you get into kind of the technical aspects, the curriculum aspects of scaffolding, it's, you know, it's like, you know, what kind of resources are you using? You know, for me, you know, it's the standards-based instructional tools are important for the literacy mastery. But it's also the types of learning strategies that I'm using, that I'm adjusting as well, that's helping. And as I mentioned a minute ago, feedback is also important in scaffolding learning, and that really helps, because a student, if we're just giving them a grade or her a grade, and when they don't know what they did incorrectly or what they need to improve, then that's not helping them. So I try to, you know, when I collect an assignment, when I collect formative assessment, I really try to write a few sentences and say, hey, this thought and this idea, you know, just didn't relate in the way that the standard is asking. And I have students take another look at their work the next day, and correct it before we move on. So I think that's also a powerful scaffolding technique that I use as well.
Oh, excellent. Thank you. And it, you know, it's such an important concept as a classroom teacher to have, I think, to, you know, continue to develop the skills in and using it to help kids develop their understanding and, of the content, just to be able to use those different tools that exist to help with that process known as scaffolding. I thank you for explaining that, because I think it plays a big part in your article, as well as obviously graphic organizers are part of that scaffolding, wouldn't you say?
Definitely. I mean, they drive the instruction, and they drive the instruction very effectively and efficiently to the goal.
Excellent. So what I'd like to do now is let's shift to your article. You have an article that was published in EdSurge this June. It's titled "Voice and Choice is Important, but Sometimes It's Not Enough." At the conclusion of the article, this statement appears. This story is part of an EdSurge research series about how personalized learning is implemented in different school communities across the country. Can you share a little about the series and what prompted your interest to submit an article for this?
Sure. So back in March, I participated in an event that EdSurge put on. Well, they were putting on in many different cities across the nation. And so, you know, being from Chicago, I participated in the one that was in Chicago, and it's called the EdSurge Tech Leaders Circle. And they brought together a bunch of us, classroom teachers, to talk about personalized learning. And the facilitator at the end said that if anybody has an idea to write an article around that to, you know, to reach out to her. And so as I talked through personalized learning with some of my colleagues there, some of those ideas really formulated for the article. And then as I was driving home, I was kind of thinking through things. And so I really thought that what I shared with my colleagues that night at the end of March is something that I could turn into an article and share with a broader audience. And so that's what I did, and hopefully it's an article that has gotten teachers across the nation kind of thinking about personalized learning in a different way.
Well, I know it did me, and that's, I was excited about it. I've shared it with all kinds of colleagues, and I have and that's why I really want to get into it now. So we've got. In the beginning of your article, you say, "I realize that while giving students opportunities to pursue their interests can improve engagement, it's not always enough." Can you talk about that a little bit?
Definitely. I mean, the whole article is how I came to that conclusion, that personalization, it improves and it's good for engagement, but it's not always enough for the literacy mastery. And so the article centers around a student that I had first year I was teaching. His name is Jack. And I remember him as a very intelligent, very popular, very worldly student, kind of an all-American kid. But yet his literacy for a senior, most likely going to college, was probably below average. And things kind of came to a head when I gave the class an essay, and he wasn't really into it. And I came to find out that, you know, he was kind of down a little bit, having some trouble with his parents, kind of getting into conflicts there. His parents gave him a curfew. He was kind of bummed on that. And I thought, hey, well, this essay, I can kind of personalize it and give him some voice to some of his kind of, you know, home frustrations. And I thought I kind of would hit the jackpot if I just gave him the task that he was passionate about at the moment. But what he turned in, it was very unfocused. It was very unstructured, and he didn't really satisfy the literacy piece of the assignment. So it was my first year teaching. Didn't really know exactly what to do, but I thought, you know, I didn't provide him anything to concretely get him to the goal, to write with a particular kind of structure. And so I thought, hey, what if I make a brainstorm for him, make a tool for him to make sure that he satisfies the literacy components here? And that's how I turned around this assignment. And on the second time, you know, on the rewriting, he did a really good job because he was a really good wordsmith. He's very intelligent, but I figured it was my first experience, my first aha moment that where I said, wow, if I can make an instructional tool made for what the expectations of the assignment is, I can really get kids to show the literacy and to really learn the literacy. And so then that's what the article is about, is that whole experience. But just an additional point, I read in the American Educator an article by I believe his name's Daniel Willingham, and he makes the point that matching instruction to students' learning style, that there's no hard evidence that actually leads to any great outcomes. And you know, when I looked at that, and I only mention that here as a point of reflection. Because it doesn't mean that we shouldn't match instruction to the way that students learn. But when you kind of reflect on that, you know, the way that I think of it is that, you know, we need to make instruction, we need to personalize, we need to make instruction to the way that students learn. And it's kind of like a business knowing its audience and making products that fit customers. That's important, or else the customer won't buy the product. But in the end, the customer has to have money in his pocket. So fitting a product for the customer only goes so far. They might be interested, they might be engaged, but they've got to have the money to buy it. And so the way that I look at engagement is that you can bring the students in, but then you need what I call a standards-based instructional tool for the student to actually go ahead and take in the instruction and actually be successful with it. And so, you know, personalization and differentiation, it's great. But I think we also have to be very careful about how we go about it and what we're providing students beyond just the rubric and the task and the question, the open-ended question or the multiple choice question. We've got to go beyond that, I believe, and put something in front of students that really leads them to the outcome. And so this article was my first experience with coming to that conclusion.
That's awesome. You've shared about the student you've named Jack and your experiences with him. And, you know, is there, when the reader sits down and thinks about what you're talking about, what's that one thing you really want them to take away from your article?
So it's just the thought that engagement, you know, using engaging teaching strategies and differentiating and personalizing, that definitely engages, but that doesn't automatically mean that it equates to mastery of precise literacy skills, of precise reading and writing skills and speaking and listening skills. And so, you know, in a classroom can be engagement rich. You know, you can have a very engaging teacher that really knows his content, and students really want to go there and learn, and there's a great relationship, and students are really engaged in what they're doing. But at the same time, that really good engaging class can be kind of literacy poor, especially when students aren't being provided more than just a blank to write out answers. And I think standards-based instructional tools and the graphic organizers that I've created really can up the level of literacy in class and really make that engagement more literacy rich that teachers are building and having with students. And so, you know, an example is, you know, if you have a student that really loves social media, and you know, as a teacher, you know, if I see this, I might get an article on social media, you know, at the student's reading level, and it's perfect, and get the perfect text. But if I'm asking the student to like cite text, do an analysis of you know, citing text for inferences as well as what the text says, one of the popular reading standards, you know, if all I'm giving them is the personalized text to engage them, but I'm not giving any tool, they might get into the reading but not be able to express the reading standard that I'm asking them, that's kind of at the core of the assignment. And I just think we need to look at that. What are we putting in front of kids? And so the big idea, as I mentioned, is, you know, personalization with standards-based instructional tools like I have with the Visual Edge can really have the best of both worlds. You can have an engagement-rich class with a literacy-rich class, and then you're getting the best of both worlds. So I would say that's the big idea, is to look at, you know, the engagement with the literacy, but the literacy is very precise. So you got to have a precise tool to have that kind of precise interaction with the class and you know, with the text and the topics that are being pursued.
And that's awesome, because, you know, one of the things that I think that you know, just like what you're getting at, is that we come up with, you know, when research tells us this is what we need to do, and we start focusing on it, I think sometimes what happens is that we get a little too focused on the concept instead of how it appears in reality. So whether it's engagement or personalization, sometimes we kind of forget what our point is, I think.
yeah, I mean, just like I said, it's if, you know, I think what the paradigm switch that's happened in the last 20 years since I've been in high school, it seems like anyway, is it's not just about the text.
Right.
You know, when I was in high school, it was just, you know, read the text, talk about it, answer some questions. That was good enough. But today, you know, if we're engaging in precise literacy skills, which is great, you know, building a more literate kind of classroom, then we need to have tools that focus on that as well. So when you have the text and you have the tool to execute the standard, that you can actually model very precisely, have students work on the text and the analysis in a very precise way, where they can kind of extract those ideas and make sure that they connect them, you know, per the analysis, just makes things a lot more rich, and you get to mastery a lot faster than you do with just saying, hey kids, read the text, write a paragraph, or here's a rubric, go satisfy these expectations. I don't think that works when you're teaching precise literacy skills.
Oh, I so agree with you. And yes, you know, just to add one more thing, especially in the social studies, a lot of times in the textbook, there would be those little boxes that were a different color from the rest of it. And that's the other place where the test questions came from. So it was really, did you pay attention to my pattern of how I find my questions?
Right. Yeah. So, and I remember that. I definitely remember you know, classrooms that were very much just here, read, answer these questions, have a little interaction. And that's great for understanding the content. But for the literacy infusion, maybe there's got to be a little bit more there.
Yeah, I agree with you. There's not a whole lot of focus on literacy there. So let's shift a little bit. If your current self could talk to your past self, what is one thing that you would tell you to do differently?
I wish I could do that, because my first year teaching wasn't very good. I wish I had a coach such as myself. But I would say, if I had to pick one thing, I think going into my first year, I think I was too socially focused in the classroom. And that was just because in my high school experience, I saw teachers that were very, very good at getting us engaged and making it fun. And I thought I could just go in there and engage and make it fun. And I think I was too focused on that side of things. And so if I could tell myself to do one thing differently, is just be more academically focused and kind of allow the social aspect to really help the academics, and not center so much on the social aspect of things. And you know, the way that I look at it now is you know, the social aspect of the class, that, you know, it's not an end in and of itself. It, for me now, it's a means to the end of the academic, the content and the literacy. And so I kind of look at it that way. And I wish I was, had a little bit better balance between the social and the academic side of teaching that first year.
That's excellent. Thanks for sharing it with me. And I know I wish, I really wish the, me could go back in time and say, "Hey, psst, buddy, all right, let's, here's some adjustments," right?
Yeah. Well, I heard the quote that experience is something you get like after you need it. So nice. I think that goes for everybody.
I think you're right. So if given the opportunity to work with teachers in understanding the use of graphic organizers and other scaffolding techniques, you know, you're given this opportunity to work with them. How would you share with them the lessons you've learned about helping kids and teaching kids and developing a better understanding of the context? What would you do to help them do this?
Well, I put on several workshops every year centered around the concept of standards-based instructional tools, as well as specific workshops for the visual edge. And so what I start with is I start with a simulation to get on the dichotomy between the tools of instruction and strategies for instruction, and kind of get a good understanding of those two, because I think that the tools and strategies, I think sometimes the difference between them is a little bit cloudy. And so to make the point of the effect that my graphic organizers that I've created can have, I start with that dichotomy. And then I go into, you know, like, what are these types of tools? What do they look like? I go into some of the benefits and then how they can be used, as well as I sprinkle throughout that process, I sprinkle some examples of how to use specific tools for specific standards with text. So I provide teachers with texts and a tool for a specific standard, and say, "Hey, here's the tool that's made for this standard. Here's how you might use it for this particular text and this particular standard." And I go through a bunch of examples for the reading and also for the writing. You know, if you're teaching a persuasive writing, for example, with claim, reasons, and evidence, I show students, well, here's a tool that's perfectly made for this particular persuasive writing standard, and here's what it might look like when you're brainstorming a specific topic. So that's kind of a window into some of the way that I go about putting on workshops on standards-based instructional tools, as well as the visual edge.
Excellent. Thank you. And so before we finish, you know, we're getting close now. If a listener would like to reach out to you to find out more about doing those workshops or to find out about the visual edge, what's the best way to get in touch with you?
Sure. Well, first of all, email. So I'll spell my name. It's SARGYLETUCHY at hotmail.com. That's one way to reach out and to buy the book, and also to buy the Visual Edge. It's available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble. I might make it available on Teachers Pay Teachers as well. So those are the ways to buy the book. But again, feel free to email me. That's the best way to reach out, I guess.
Awesome. And I'll have that email in my show notes, as well as a link to the Visual Edge and a couple other different places like Amazon. So for all you listening, it'll be easy to just go there so you don't have to remember exactly what Sarji said right there. So do you have
Steve, just an add-on. If listeners email me, I can offer a discount on the Visual Edge. So just an idea. If anybody's interested.
Very cool. Like that. So, yes, you heard him right. He said that if you email him and say you're interested in purchasing the Visual Edge, he'll get you a discount. So like that. It's a very good tool. So good stuff. Thanks for doing that, Sarji. That's awesome. So do you have anything else in any other projects, articles, or books in the works?
Always thinking about articles. So working on a few that might be out in the fall or kind of into next year. That's kind of my summer hobby. once I get into the 9 to 5, my focus turns more to school, to the classroom. But definitely I'm always working on articles to kind of engage teachers across the country on what I believe really can help make good, effective instruction with literacy.
Excellent. So one of the things that I want to make sure that I talk about here is I've got two last questions, and they go like this. And I'm going to start that again because I was babbling. I have no clue where I was going, why my brain was doing that. So stop, and here we go. So last two questions, Sarji. If you were given the chance to talk with 100 brand new teachers who are getting ready for their first day of class, what would you tell them about preparing for the first day? And what I'm talking about is specifically that first day with the kids.
Okay. So yeah, for the first day, and for me, I have two goals on the first day. You have that 45 minutes. It's my first impression. And so it's important, I believe, to really give students a good sense of who you are and your personality, and just really be comfortable in showing your personality that first day. And so if you're somebody who's funny, who kind of engages in that way, it's important to show that so that kind of students see who you are when they leave after the 45 or 50 minutes. If you're more kind of task oriented, if you're a taskmaster, well, show them that you are, so that they know what to expect. And the quicker they know what to expect, the more comfortable that they become. But I think, for me, a second thing I do on the first day is I really get into detail and explain how my class is structured. And so I really get into, here's what we're going to be doing on kind of a daily basis, a weekly basis. Here's what a unit looks like. Kind of show them what my calendar looks like. And so I think that's very powerful, because when I show them on the first day and talk about it, they've been in school their whole life. So they know sometimes the teachers talk one way on the first day, but then something else might happen the rest of the year. What I think is powerful is when I make that happen over the first 4 weeks, 6 weeks, or however long the first unit or two, when I make that happen, what I explained on the first day, I really build really good trust and respect with them. And so for me, that's also important. And then it makes really the rest of the year go very smoothly when I do that. So, specific to the first day, I think those are the two things that are on my mind anyway. But then I kind of more broadly speaking, getting ready for the first day and getting ready for the whole year. It's just, I keep in mind that if results are important to us, if content and literacy results are important, then planning has to be really important as well. And so I would tell first year teachers, just be ready for the whole year. Be ready with your curriculum, because it's really hard to develop things and do some big picture thinking with curriculum throughout the year, because you're executing You got to have a life as well after school and on the weekends. And so it's hard to put in a lot of hours doing the unit planning. And so, I kind of think of preparation and planning as just like an engineer or architect kind of designing a building or designing a machine. And I think, I try to take on that attitude in creating curriculum for classes and really how can I weave together, strategies and resources and assessments so they really fit the standards and fit the way that students learn so I could be successful throughout the year. So that's another thing that I think is important for new teachers to think about, like really engage in the summer and be ready to go. It really makes the year go a lot smoother. You can execute, you can make some adjustments, but you don't have to develop a whole lot because you've already done it. And the summer is just the perfect time because you've got a lot of time, a little bit more energy. You're not getting up early every day. And so it's just easier to take care of that, I believe, during the summer. And then finally, I think it's important to find a master teacher for new teachers, to find a master teacher that, especially one that has a strength that fits what new teachers perceive as their weakness, somebody that can really help with their weakness. And so if your strength is relationships with students, but your weakness is kind of the technical curriculum aspect, I would say find a master teacher that's really good at curriculum. If it's the other way around, if you're really good at curriculum, find a teacher that's really good with building relationships and really observe them and kind of try some things out and kind of upkeep the relationship and try to improve throughout the year by having a guide, somebody that's really good at a particular aspect of teaching. So those are some of the things that I would share with first year teachers.
Excellent. Thank you. And it's I can't say enough about that emphasis on being prepared and planning. And if you can get some guidance and coaching from that mentor, that's awesome stuff. Good advice. So last question. And here we go. If money was not an issue, what is something that you would want to have access to for teaching your students?
Can I have a superpower?
Sure. Go right ahead.
So if I could have something, I'd have a superpower to solve and really help some of my students out of school challenges and barriers that they have to being as successful as possible. And I don't think that my experience is that much different than teachers of, especially of ESL and bilingual students, immigrant students throughout the country. I have students that have to work late. They work until the wee hours of the morning, and then they still show up every day. I have some students that are here on their own, that might be living with a relative or a friend. Many students I know have parents working at night, and those are some of the realities. Those realities, though, those challenges really make school more difficult for the cadre of ESL bilingual students throughout the country. And so, gosh, I would love to have a magic wand where I could just kind of, I wish there was something there for them and their families to support some of the challenges that they're going through. So I would love to have that. I'd love to have access to that. And I don't know if you saw, but there was an article or a research study that just came out about heavy social media use. I saw it on CNN and some of the major networks, Fox News. But so what the researchers have found is there's a pretty good connection between heavy social media use and ADHD.
Oh, interesting. No, I've not seen that.
What I've seen is a very clear connection with my students of heavy social media use and a lack of sleep that they're getting.
Yeah.
And obviously impacts their school performance. And so I just wish that, that's a challenge, and it's not just ESL bilingual students. It's probably a broader challenge, but I would say that there needs to be, especially students that don't have the support systems at home, for example, for this issue of heavy social media use, there's got to be some support systems that are there. Maybe it's like a state and local government issue, or kind of a district issue. But I think if parents, especially immigrant parents, not all of them are in a great position to really help students navigate some of these challenges. And I think there has to be something that's there. There has to be an organization or maybe an arm of a school that's focused on some of these out of school barriers, or just give me the wand and I'll just wave the wand and everything will be better. So, but I wish I had access to somehow really help with some of those challenges.
Thank you so much. That's an awesome thought there, because being able to make those challenges go away would be an incredible power to have, because that alone, there's so many, that hits on so many levels in what interferes with kids being able to be successful. Well, Sardi, it's been awesome talking with you today. I've enjoyed our conversation. The Visual Edge Graphic Organizers for Standards-Based Learning is an excellent tool, and I love this article you had that came out in June called Voice and Choice is Important, but Sometimes It's Not Enough. And I will, this was in EdSurge for listeners. I'll put a link to it in my show notes as well. Sarji, thank you so much for joining me again. I appreciate it. It's great talking with you again.
Thank you, Steve.
Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is excited to be a member of Voice Ed Radio. Voice Ed Radio, your voice is right here. Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is a proud member of the Education Podcast Network. Podcasts for educators, podcasts by educators. The opinions expressed on Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 are those of the guests and host. Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is intended to share ideas, advice, and suggestions for classroom teachers and school administrators. Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is produced for educational purposes. Thanks for listening, and I hope you'll share it with your friends.